I want to go back to the table just a little bit. I know I got you to touch on it just briefly as far as some of the differentiating features. Price point is a huge one. And
that's always the one that gets people's attention. They look at, for instance, you know, our base KDT system, we put it out on the market at $89.95. And it really is the best our basic KDT system, and I'm not overstating this. It is the best decompression system available. I don't care what price point you look at, except for our newest entry, the KDT Neuroflex, and I'll explain the differences. But the basic KDT system is the first table that was really designed with directional preference positioning available. The caudal split allows you, for the first time, to get this extension or deep flexion, and this is what you need in the lumbar spine from a positional point of view, to gain nuclear centralization, to get a peripheral symptom or radicular symptom to centralize. That happens first with position, then with the application of traction to create this decompressive scenario. So if you look at the base KDT system, it allows flexion or extension to occur in the lumbar spine itself. No other system does that on the market. Secondarily, it has all kinds of other innovation in it. One, its prone positioning is comfortable. You can breathe with the system. Your shoulders are allowed, just like with an adjusting table, to have a neutral position with your elbows down and your arms out, just the way a patient lays on an adjusting table. We designed our foam so that you could come in and adjust the patient after their decompression session, which a lot of docs, that's the way they like to do it. So you can actually adjust on this table. I'm not telling you it's an adjusting table, but you can adjust on it. It's comfortable enough. The other thing we did is we solved the problems of the table itself being an inhibitor of the transfer of force. Now, this is a pretty complicated thing for someone to understand, but I'm going to try to make it pretty basic here. All of if you look at it, what's the difference between a traction table and a decompression table? It really comes down to a couple of basic things that were improvements. One, the belting systems were dramatically improved so that you would have a true center line of pull. They wouldn't alter pelvic tilt or do anything weird when you were pulling on the spine that might alter other structure that doesn't like that. And secondarily, decompression is not just unloading the spine. It is also a process of reloading the spine. That's why we use intermittent force during the procedure. So you pull and hold, and then you let go. Well, during the let go, a traditional traction table doesn't come back together. There is no mechanism of the table that will force the patient's spine back into a compressive state. Okay? So initially, on the prototypes that we built, we used bungee cords, believe it or not. You know, we used to laugh and say it was the special red bungee from Advanced Auto Parts double wrap, but it gave about 40 pounds to these traction tables of retraction force, which takes the patient's spine on you pull, let's say, at 30% body weight. Let's arbitrarily say we would pull at 60 pounds, and then we would rest at 30 pounds. 30 pounds based on cannular insertion studies, disc pressure studies, show that that returns that disc to a slightly compressive stage, which, you know, the disc is like a sponge. We want to pull stuff in. We want to push stuff out. And the traditional traction tables did not allow for compression during the rest phase. So we did that by forcing the table back together originally with a bungee. The second phase of that was the manufacturer obviously decided that a spring would be more professional than hanging a bungee cord on the table. I couldn't have agreed more, but they used a 40-pound extension spring. If you look like Chattanooga or Dynatronics, they all put springs on the back of the table to force the table back together. Now, what they never really understood, though, this comes from, you know, guys like Dr. Kennedy who teach us the physics of this. 40 pounds is not good for everybody, you know, in terms of releasing that table back. When you look at time force interplay on split tables, they're friction-free. It takes 25% of body weight because the table freely floats backwards. Now, that 40 pounds of spring inhibits how the table will open, so it controls it, makes it very nice and slow and even when you open it. And then it's supposed to force it back together. Well, that's nice if you have the right weight patient on the table. But as you well know, most of our patients are not a homogeneous population. And what would happen is, and most clinicians, when they hear this, people that are doing decompression, never taking the technique, if you watch your table when it opens, many times it will open too much, which means that based on your force calculation, too much force is being allowed to hit that patient. That means the table is opening too much stretch is occurring. If it's more than a half an inch or so of opening of the table and then you watch it close on the rest phase, it's just too much. On the other hand, you pull on a patient and the table doesn't open at all, and this happens very frequently. If the doc actually goes in there and watches a treatment and he prescribes the force, the CA sets up the treatment, they hit the start button, it pulls up to 70 pounds and the table doesn't open, guess what? Nothing's getting into the patient's lumbar spine.
Right.
Uh-oh. So you could do everything right, but the table itself is inhibiting the force transfer to the patient's lumbar spine. This is a disaster. And we knew this. And we tried to get someone to listen to the notion of allowing the clinician, imagine that, to control how much force or inhibition force or compressive force the table was going to put onto the patient. What they did is went with a generic situation, which hardly ever works, versus what we did is we gave a clinician the ability to look at the table. You can increase force up to 50 pounds or take it all the way to zero if you need to. So they have control over the behavior of the table for the first time. Now, this isn't something that we've made a big deal out of in our marketing, but once people take the technique course and they really understand what's going on when you're applying traction to a human being and understand the role of the table and how it can either help or hurt you in the process, understanding that can dramatically improve the result just by, let's get the force that we've prescribed into the patient's low back for the first time maybe, or not too much, which can injure the patient. Some other innovations we did is we allowed for supine deep flexion treatments, and the reason for the docs in the audience, you're wondering, why would I treat prone versus supine? Your provocative exam will teach you patients who have what we call atypically migrating posterior discs. We don't talk much about anterior discs because we don't see them very often. In fact, if you see an anterior disc, you should go out and buy lottery tickets that day. That's how statistically rare they are. But having said that, since we're dealing mostly with posterior, posterior lateral discs, most of them have that, as you get non-weight bearing, that means the patient is laying down, there is a gravitational bias of a posterior disc to the anterior with gravity. It only makes sense that that's the way it would want to go with gravitational force applied. But some of them don't act that way. And the McKenzie camp figured this out after 30 years of saying everything needs extension. The reality is about 20% of the discs you see, because of cracks and other defects in the disc, degeneration, they don't move like a bag of fluid ought to move. They do something totally different. But some of these patients need very deep flexion supine, and it's the smallest percentage. So those docs that are out there in the audience that do decompression and do nothing but treat patients supine, you're wrong 80% of the time statistically based on the evidence. But having said that, there is that 20% when you provocatively examine them, that disc, due to whatever force of nature is going on it, you put them into deep flexion supine, it creates this centralization effect. And the KDT system has what we call a bolsterless leg elevation system that creates concomitant pelvic tilt. That means flattening of the lumbar spine at the same time. So you don't need a pelvic wedge or a pelvic tilt mechanism, and you don't need cumbersome bolsters anymore, which are really a pain in the butt to move around under the patient. So we're able to create much deeper flexion and a more natural and comfortable patient position, not forgetting, of course, our caudal splits allow that flexion to occur in the lumbar spine. There is no other system on the market that when you put flexion into the patient that it actually occurs in the lumbar spine. So those are some of the key things. The other thing I think bears note is that we figured out how to do lateral pulls effectively. A lot of the early tables. One of them was the Saunders table, the 3D active track. One of their big selling features was the table would pivot laterally like a flexion table will, so that you could open things up laterally. The problem with doing that with a traction system versus a flexion distraction, we all know with a flexion table, when you move the patient laterally, you're getting lateral force in the lumbar spine. They did that with the 3D active track. They actually moved the rear end of the table lateral. But what we found out is when you start applying traction, okay, it just would straighten the patient up on the table. You know, it's an axial force, and you would end up with an axial pull regardless of the fact that you had the patient pivoted laterally. So what we did is we decided instead of pivoting the table, what we would allow is lateral offset of the head and lateral offset of the belt. And it works perfectly. So you didn't need the complexity and unpredictability of lateral rear table motion. You could do it with the belts and offsetting the traction head itself. One other big plug I would like really to make about the system is, you know, I tried to respect doctors' sense of aesthetic in these tables. We wanted to make a system that did not look like a traction gurney, which is one of the faults, I think, of the lower-end tables out there. They look just like the traction gurney that the patient comes into you and says, well, I already had that at the physical therapist's office.
Right.
And you would be surprised how uncomfortable a conversation that becomes. Now you are in the position of doing what? Making hyperbolic statements about, well, I'm doing decompression, not traction.
Right.
What, with the same piece of equipment? People aren't that dumb. So what I wanted to do was make sure that you didn't have to have that conversation. I wanted to give you a very elegant, very high-quality system that did not look like a traffic or a traction gurney, and it looked more high-end. We used some stainless steel. We used some center pedestal construction. It's a very elegant system, but we did it in a way that didn't obviously come with the price tag of these higher-end looking systems.
Well, Jeff, you mentioned price there, and being the business consultant,